For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Morning Drive with Goodman and Hurdle. Presented by Silterhar Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silterhar Mazda. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wild Card Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Bruce.
And good morning, everybody. Good to have you with us as we get rolling on a Friday. Hurdle and Miller, Mick Miller in from Fox 31 and Colorado's own Channel 2. Eric is out getting a very well-earned day off. He's going to be playing a little golf today down in Arizona, where the weather is going to be a hell of a lot better than it is here today. What's up, my friend?
How you doing? Good to be back with you.
I'm trying to just stretch it out and getting it going on a Friday. God knows we've got plenty to get to today,
yes.
And none of it is particularly good. I mean, I guess it's good as far as fodder for sports talk. We'll figure it out as we get to the lead.
The lead, presented by Sasquatch Casino in Blackhawk.
All right, we wake up this morning with no second interviews for Broncos coaching job scheduled, at least publicly. We do know that Dan Quinn now has exited stage right. No longer is he a candidate for any job, obviously reading the writing on the wall. Does all this lack of movement and the movement that we have with Dan Quinn, and remember, all of the candidates could have, they were available and eligible to have had a second interview all of this week. Does it seriously signal that D'Amico Ryans is the clear-cut favorite for this job?
I think so, because if you were interested in any other candidate, you would have already scheduled the second interview. But with D'Amico Ryans, because he's playing in the NFC Championship game this weekend, you can't interview him until next week. And so why would you wait to schedule a second interview or make it public that a second interview had been conducted if D'Amico Ryans wasn't the clear-cut favorite, which I'm not a huge fan of. I think D'Amico Ryans is a good defensive coordinator. But haven't we been down this road before where a hotshot coordinator is going to come into the Broncos and be the head coach? I mean, Nathaniel Hackett was a hotshot offensive coordinator, but we know the offense was led by Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur, and we know that the defense is great over in San Francisco, but we all know Kyle Shanahan is riding that bus over there in San Fran.
Isn't the D'Amico Ryans situation basically, he doesn't bring the experience to the job. The question is, will he bring an experienced staff to the job? Because that's the only way that there's going to be any experience here. We went through the whole Nathaniel Hackett stuff. First-time head coach. Yeah, he had plenty of experience, but not as a head coach. Brought in a lot of guys, brought in his boys, brought in the band. A lot of guys that didn't have a lot of experience. I think that as we look back on it now, especially with the 2 weeks that we had with Jerry Rosberg, with an adult in the room, not to be flippant, but I guess that that's probably what I am saying, that maybe if D'Amico Ryans can just bring an experienced staff with him, he can probably circumnavigate the fact that he has 2 years of coordinating experience and essentially 4 to 5 years of coaching in the NFL. Regardless the 12 years that he played, we understand that he's a leader. We understand that he has been a leader at every stop from the time that he was a rookie in Houston and the way that he played. He was a captain. We understand all of that, but there is practical experience and there is a lack of it with him coming in. Certainly, we don't know whether or not he brings a he brings a plan along that they can hit the ground running with. So to me, if you're not going to be able to get the experience on the front end, you better have it in your coaching staff.
Yeah, and that's the big concern that you have for a rookie head coach is how many experienced, really, really good guys can you bring into your coaching staff if you're a rookie? There are not a lot of veteran guys, I'm assuming, that would want to join a rookie staff, especially in a situation where the Denver Broncos historically have had a quick trigger finger with head coaches who have struggled. And then I always go back to what Greg Penner told us after the firing of Nathaniel Hackett when asked what he was looking for in a head coach. And he did say that he's looking for a leader. There are a lot of good leaders out there, but leadership doesn't always lead to winning football games as a head coach. He also mentioned is he needs somebody that's going to bring an offensive identity. And D'Amico Ryans is a hotshot defensive coordinator. So if you're D'Amico, do you have anybody that you know that you can bring in to be not only a good offensive coordinator, but an offensive coordinator that can connect with a Russell Wilson who will be 35 next season, a Russell Wilson who has struggled in his first season as a Denver Bronco, and a Russell Wilson who is being talked nationally as a washed and unsalvageable quarterback? That's a lot to ask for a rookie head coach. And if I'm D'Amico Ryans, I would look at the Houston job as a lot more of a better job than the Denver Broncos, because at least with Houston, you could potentially get a Bryce Young, a CJ Stroud, and with a rookie quarterback and a rookie head coach, you're guaranteed, I would assume, at least 2 to 3 years to breathe. Whereas if you come into Denver and you're going to be the head coach of the Broncos, you better get this thing, you know, rolling quickly, and you better start winning football games, because the fan base is not going to stand for another season like we just saw.
By the way, isn't Houston the leader in the clubhouse?
You would assume so.
Wouldn't you think at this point, the guy played there, came into the league there, was a rookie there, cut his teeth in Houston, met his wife in Houston.
I believe she's from Houston.
She's from Houston. Yep. Now, look, I'm one of these people that believe that you just can't go home. I do believe that. And I grew up in the Pacific Northwest. I would have no interest in going back to the Pacific Northwest. Loved growing up there. It was wonderful. Yeah. My people aren't there anymore. I have no real reason to go back to the... So that's not always an immediate connect the dot for me. But to your point, the way that things are set up, you're going to be in a position to draft if you really like a quarterback, for instance, coming out in the draft this year, Bryce Young. If you really think that there's someone that can move you forward quickly, then Houston, to me, frankly, is ahead of the Broncos.
Yeah.
Now, the Broncos can do a lot of other things, but I'm not sure how willing Greg Penner and this ownership group is going to be to pay a lot of money for a long-term contract to a rookie head coach, where at the very least coming in, there may not be, there are going to be questions. You may think that you have struck gold. And I'm going to give Greg Penner and this ownership group the benefit of the doubt. They may feel like, look, we had Sean Payton on the line. We could probably have him. We're going to get into Sean Payton here in spades in just a moment. We had Sean Payton on the line. We might have been able to have Jim Harbaugh. But we're going to end up going with this guy because, and I don't want to put too much into the interview process because that's how Nathaniel Hackett got this job. The interview process was really, really good, reportedly. That's dangerous, but that's maybe what we're going into. And you know what? There are, as we have seen, that can be a slippery slope. Now, maybe you, my buddy Eric talks about it all the time, and he's right. They just haven't picked, and he's not even being casual about it when he says it, but he's right. You got to pick the right guy.
Yeah.
You got to pick the right guy for the first guy to be right. There have been more examples of guys that are first-time coaches who don't make it. But the guys that do and the guys that are successful are, they're there. Sean McVay, you know, you can go right down the list. There are plenty of guys that have been first-time head coaches that have had success and continue to have success. But you've got history. And I'm just wondering how this all plays out here in Denver. Because right now, now you take Dan Quinn out of the mix, who, if, in case you don't know, removed himself from the mix yesterday, saying that he was going to stay with the Dallas Cowboys. More power to him. And by the way, if you're the Denver Broncos, don't bother knocking on the door of Dan Quinn anymore. You've had him here on the precipice for 2 years in a row. Mm-hmm. So don't bother Dan Quinn anymore, please. Leave the guy alone. He can figure something out. It's not in Denver, Colorado. So now you've got this situation where maybe D'Amico Ryan is your favorite, but maybe you're not D'Amico Ryan's favorite. And now all of a sudden, who are you left with? Do you have a lot of enthusiasm and belief in Jim Caldwell, who you haven't gotten in for a second interview? Maybe you've done it a la Zoom behind the scenes. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes. They might have very well done interviews for all we know. But all of a sudden, things are getting a little thin.
Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day. Is like, this might be the worst coaching cycle in recent memory in terms of job openings, because if you look around the landscape, Arizona's a complete mess. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants anything to do with Kyler Murray. And by the way, Kyler Murray won't be available to any team to play next season because he has the torn ACL. Then you look down at Houston. Houston's been a dumpster fire for the last decade or so. And does anybody really want to rebuild that franchise? And then if you look at the Indianapolis Colts, I mean, it sounds like Jim Irsay really wants Jeff Saturday to be his next head coach. So you have all these job openings of franchises that are in disarray, and all these veteran coaches look at it like Dan Quinn, like Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh's a little bit different. He kind of got impatient with the interview process. Sean Payton. And these guys look at these franchises who are going to have to rebuild, and they're like, I don't think I really want to do that. Then you have the Denver Broncos, where there's potential there, where you potentially can turn it around quickly. But the problem is, if you don't turn it around quickly, you're going to be the guy like, you can fix Russell Wilson, and look at that franchise. They're known for firing coaches quickly. So I don't think that this has been a great cycle for veteran head coaches wanting to take jobs, whether it's just rebuilding a franchise or fixing Russell Wilson. So then it begs the question of, man, who's left at the end of this? And it's also interesting to note that this is the first time that the Penner and the Walton family will be conducting head coaching searches. And it begs the question, well, they're great business people, but how good of the football aspect are they? And is this their first interview process that they're going through? And are there going to be some growing pains?
Yeah, at this point, unless something else emerges, your backup plan right now is David Shaw or Jim Caldwell.
And none of those guys excite me.
Well, I like Jim Caldwell. I do. And I like him. I mean, I guess as a fallback guy, he could be fairly solid. He would be better, I think, as an offensive coordinator. But I'm with you on that. There's not a lot of excitement. So if I ask you the biggest concern here that we have now with Ryan's taking over, I think that you've already touched upon it. And I will ask you the question as a way of answering my own question. Can't you make the argument that of the 8 candidates for the head coaching job of the Denver Broncos, that D'Amico Ryans might be the least qualified to, quote, fix Russell Wilson.
Yeah, because Russ has had historically a lot of success against the San Francisco 49ers, who have been considered one of the best teams to have one of the best defenses. And if you're Russell Wilson, you're looking at this young, again, first year head coach, and you're like, this guy is going to be my new head coach, the guy whose defense I've been carving up for the last couple of seasons. He's supposed to come in here and teach me and lead me to win another Super Bowl, which we all know is Russell Wilson's goal. I think this is a slippery slope where if you bring in a defensive head coach and Russell Wilson's looking around the landscape, he's like, well, Patrick Mahomes has Andy Reid, mm-hmm. and Jalen Hurts has mm-hmm. Nick Sirianni, and Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant, has Kyle Shanahan. All of a sudden, he's undefeated. I think that's one of the reasons that led to the divorce between Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll. I think Russ wants an offensive guy, but it has to be a guy who can be at the same level as Russell Wilson. I think that was the big problem with Nathaniel Hackett, is Russell Wilson was touted as a future Hall of Famer, as Nathaniel Hackett was just a first-year head coach. It's got to be a guy that can go toe-to-toe with Russell Wilson and be like, hey, you need to do this, as opposed to Russell Wilson saying, hey, I'm going to do this.
You could make the argument that it's not head coach, but offensive coordinator that is the more important hire if you're going to bring in D'Amico Ryans. Now, look, there's a lot about D'Amico Ryans that I'm excited about, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But in terms of immediacy for the offense, it's going to be a question of who he would bring along as offensive coordinator. Because I can make the statement with confidence that D'Amico Ryans, in terms of his experience at this particular point, compared to any of the other coaching candidates, has probably the least experience working with an offense, working with a quarterback, and being in a position to, quote unquote, fix Russell Wilson. We're just getting going as we continue. Sean Payton and his ship, has it sailed irrevocably? Some interesting stuff coming out of, Mick, your home, Washington, D.C., yesterday. We'll get to it as we continue here this morning. You are on the drive with Goodman and Hurdle. Mick Miller in today as we are rolling on a Friday. Well, listen to this.
Morning Drive with Goodman and Hurdle, presented by Silter Har Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wild Card Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Bruce.
Mick Miller in today from Fox 31 and Colorado's Channel 2. Alex and Zach, obviously, making us sound better than we deserve to be behind the glass. You're getting ready to go to the Super Bowl. People may not know that. Will this be your first Super Bowl that you've covered?
Yeah, it'll be the first one. So
excited?
So excited, especially based off the Broncos season that I just had to cover. To be able to cover a Super Bowl, the first rookie season covering the NFL, it's a pretty good way to end it.
Are you saying that there's no mistaking that, you know, Denver's not going to give you that opportunity sometime in your professional life?
I'm not saying that there's no chance. I'm saying that there is a chance, but I wouldn't hold my breath. I'm going to cherish this opportunity as much as I can this time. And the, you know, opportunity doesn't arise in the near future, I at least have the memories of this one.
Rolling on in on the morning drive here, courtesy of our friends from Silter Har Motors. Let's get to it. Time for the buzz.
The Buzz is presented by Paramount Siding and Windows. Paramount Siding and Windows, it's quality in everything they do. Find them at ParamountSidingandWindows.com.
The spiciest Sean Payton report. See how I did that? Spicy?
I like that.
Yeah, very good. The spiciest Sean Payton report so far comes to us from the Washington Post, Mark Maskey, who yesterday updated Payton's negotiations with the Denver Broncos, saying via Twitter that Payton likes the football setup, coaching Russell Wilson, not a problem, working with talented defense, but, and here's the interesting part, There's been a hitch in the interviewing process with new Broncos ownership group, and that Peyton, and this is quoted, fears a potential power struggle with one of the team's owners. Wow. Now let's think about this for a moment. There were three people, supposedly, in the room when Sean Payton did his first interview. Greg Penner, George Payton, who was not an owner, is a general manager, and Condoleezza Rice. So what do we make out of these comments, which, by the way, Sean Payton, what, late last night, early this morning, said that this is patently false, that he had a tremendous experience with the Broncos ownership. We'll get to that in just a moment. Thoughts?
Bruce, this reminds me of a young teenage Mick who would ask a girl out. She'd say no.
Wait a minute, that never happened.
Yeah, probably
not. Never, right?
And then I go to my buddies, or she would say no, obviously, because why would she say yes to going out with 16-year-old Mick?
Right.
And I'd go to my buddies and be like, well, you know, she wasn't that cute anyways.
Nah, she wasn't really that cute.
She wasn't that great. No. And then my buddies would leak it over to her, and she'd be like, so I heard you were talking. No, I didn't say that.
That you know, is my so buddy, time-honored.
My buddies, they kind of just, you know, they're always messing around. That's what it reeks of, because why are all these stories coming out? Why does he have an issue with the ownership group? Why is there a hunting trip issue that wouldn't set up for another interview? This just reeks of dysfunction. It reeks of a lot of powerful people having, you know, things they want to do. But this is what I think it all comes to. You get a rookie head coach. I'm trying to think of a rookie head coach going into an interview. And on one side, potentially you have maybe Rob Walton, the richest guy, the heir of the Walmart group. You got Greg Penner, the CEO. You have Carrie, you know, Greg's wife and the daughter of Rob Walton. And then you have Condoleezza Rice.
Now, yeah, no kidding, right?
Well, the first game that Condoleezza Rice came to Mile High Stadium, our boss, Dave Althaus, he was like, hey, there's Condoleezza Rice. Go talk to her. I didn't know he was joking, so I went over and talked to her. But it was the most intimidating thing that I've done in a very, very long time. So I'm imagining a rookie head coach looking around the landscape and being like, wow, this is pretty intimidating. But if I'm Sean Payton, I'm a Super Bowl head coach. I really probably at this point in my life don't really get intimidated by a lot of people. At the end of the day, I want a $20 million check and I want to be a head coach and I want to win another Super Bowl. So I would see Sean Payton. This makes more sense if there's a power struggle between Sean Payton as opposed to a D'Amico Ryans. But I'm not going to play investigative journalism. I'm on our I-team over at Fox 31. We have a great team that does that.
You bet.
It's kind of, I would assume it's Greg Penner, because when Nathaniel Hackett got fired, it really was Greg Penner who led that press conference. George Payton was there, but that was more of, you know, here, he's not going to be fired, but, you know, he's on a short leash. This is my ship. I'm running it. If I were to guess, if there was somebody in that ownership group that potentially Sean Payton would look at and be like, oh, I don't really want to deal with this guy on a daily basis. And we know that the head coach is going to report directly to Greg Penner. It's not going to be to a GM. And we know Sean Payton's, the Bill Belichick's, they have a lot of say in personnel and they have a lot of power in the organization. So if I were to guess that there's somebody that Sean Payton potentially could not want to have a power struggle with, I would assume it would be the acting CEO.
What have we learned about Sean Payton and his process during this? And you just described it as very junior high-ish or high school or, you know, whatever the case may be. But there's been a feel like that.
Yeah.
Planning information, leaks from various sources that seem very predetermined and set up. It has left me with a bit of a sour taste for Sean Payton. And I don't deny Sean Payton's process and the fact that it's worked over the course of a lot of years. He is a guy that if you bring him in, immediately brings in a process that has worked consistently at the NFL level. A winning process. But, man, I don't know. I don't think that I have. If I started with a good feeling about Sean Payton, I'm not sure I'm leaving with one.
See, I'm not as high on Sean Payton as a lot of people.
Right.
Initially, I was because everybody touted him as this offensive genius, and he would be such an amazing coach. And you know when somebody gives you way too many compliments? They give you one compliment, you're like, oh, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
But then they keep going, and then you're like, okay, what is your point?
Yeah.
What are you trying to
what
get
do you need?
As a result of all these compliments? So then I did a little bit of research on Sean Payton. He had Drew Brees, right, at the peak of his powers, but they had four losing seasons. There were years where they were bad with a prime Drew Brees. And then you had Bounty Gate, which, you know, wherever you want to splice that, it was the defensive coordinator that was doing that. But if you're the head coach, if you're the boss, what happens in your room?
Well, he sat out a year for it.
He had to sit out a year,
yeah,
right?
Right.
And then you get to the tail end of Drew Brees, and they try to, you know, salvage it with paying a lot of dudes, which kills your cap. And then you look at the landscape, and you're like, you know what? I really don't want to do this anymore. But I do want to coach. I just don't want to do here and fix what I essentially messed up. So I have all these little red flags around Sean Payton. And then what kind of gets lost in a lot of the discussion around Sean Payton is that you have to trade for him. And it doesn't sound like New Orleans is going to take, you know, a quarter on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to, it's probably going to make you give up the first round draft pick, which you got from the Bradley Chubb trade, which is probably not going to be, is going to be a very, very late first round pick because San Francisco owns that right. And you're going to have to give up a third round pick. So you're going to have no draft capital. You're going to give nothing for George Payton to work with in the draft. And then you're just going to be like, Sean, Russ, have at it, buddy. Good luck. I'm not as high on Sean Payton along with these red flags that I've been seeing.
Well, okay, so if it boils down to Sean Payton, his experience, his process, his track record, his ability to work with quarterbacks, there's no denying that Sean Payton had a lot to do with the success of Drew Brees. People got to be careful. You talk about Drew Brees. Well, he had Drew Brees. But he had Drew Brees post-Chargers when San Diego at the time was more than willing to part ways with him, with Phillip Rivers coming into the fold. So they were more than willing to give up, and they did. And Sean Payton grabbed this guy, and he did help to shape and form the talent that is Drew Brees. That is an undeniable Hall of Fame quarterback. So you have these two things. To me, these are the two main selling points of Sean Payton. He's done it for a long time. He has generally done it successfully. He has generally won. Not every single year, but he generally wins. So he knows how to do it. Now, the downside is he has not been immune to controversy. He has been a bit of a cap wrecker in New Orleans, no question. He kind of gave up on the Saints when Drew Brees decided to call it a career. That's why he's still under contract to the Saints for another year, by the way.
Yep.
So there are all kinds of, and then you add the compensation, which I think for the Broncos, it's logical to assume that it would probably be a first and a second maybe, or a third, whatever they would negotiate, maybe a future third, who knows, whatever it is. So then you've got to start balancing the equation. All right, so on one hand, you have these things that you've got to give him credit for. On the other hand, is it really worth more to bring him in for $20 or $22 or $25 million a year, give him total control of the franchise from a football operations standpoint over what you would get from one of these other guys, even a D'Amico Ryans or a Jim Caldwell, a David Shaw, whomever it ends up being? That's a tough one for me. And I think that my answer now, based upon what we've seen from Sean Payton, is I'm not sure I want to deal with this guy. It's been too much drama. Now, I'm not sure that's all Sean Payton's fault, but it's not happened with any other one of these candidates, as far as I know, right?
Yeah, and I mean, just to go back to your point of, you know, he did bring back Drew Brees, who was injured and the Chargers moved on from him. It took him 4 years to put it together when they won that Super Bowl against Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts. Do we have 4 years with Russell Wilson to be patient? Because he's going to be 35 next year. And right. Do we really think at 39,
oh, no, it's the here
Russell
and the
Wilson
we're
is
on the here and
elite?
Now with so Russell like, Wilson. Right.
Yeah, so he's got to fix it
right
now. And to go along with your point, it's all about how you impact a franchise and you leave a franchise. Sean Payton made a huge impact with the New Orleans Saints, especially everything that that city went through with Katrina. But can we say as a franchise, Sean Payton left the Saints better off than when he showed up? He actually put him on a roller coaster where he took him to the highest point.
Yep.
And then as he left, they were at the lowest point. And the Broncos, do they really look at a Sean Payton and be like, when he eventually does leave, is he going to leave the franchise in a place where we can continue win a winning franchise? Can we continue being a destination where players want to be? I don't know. Sean Payton, there seems to be a lot of red flags. And amidst all the red flags, I keep coming back to, you got to trade for him. If he was just clear cut, no problems, the guy,
a free agent, for instance, oh, right, and agent, no compensation,
then I think I'd risk it. But I have to leverage the future of the franchise to get this guy in the offset that he can come in and fix everything. It's a little scary.
All right, we'll continue here in a moment. Nathaniel Hackett has a new job, and it might surprise you how quickly he got it and with whom, but it all makes sense. And we'll do that here in just a moment.
Morning Drive with Goodman and Hurdle, presented by Silter Har Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Bruce.
All right, 7:38 in the a.m. on a Friday. Hope you're off to a good start. Maybe getting an early start on your weekend. Don't forget, we're going to have the Rocky Mountain Forest Products, wholesale to the lumber, wholesale lumber to the public, rather. And we're going to have a big gambling challenge coming up. That's about at 8:15. So we're looking forward to that. Be interested to hear about who you like, why you like. I'm going to drag the guys in on this, get their expertise on this as we're down to the final four. So that's coming up at about 8:15. Make plans to attend here in second hour. All right, continuing on, time now for What's Trending.
What's Trending? Presented by Silter Har Mazda. Get to Silter Har in Broomfield for a no-pressure buying experience at Silter Har Mazda or find them at sthmazda.com.
Wait a minute. What? Nathaniel Hackett got a job with the New York Jets as offensive coordinator?
Is this real life?
Yes, apparently. Look, they interviewed like 10 different people for this job. Clint Kubiak was in this mix as well. So Nathaniel Hackett gets the job. Good for him. Turns it around quickly after his train wreck in Denver, which he's weighing in on, interestingly. We'll get to that in a moment. But gets a job with his buddy, Robert Saleh, have a relationship that dates back to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Okay, I get it. But does Saleh really know that he was the head coach of the Denver Broncos and had Russell Wilson? And I mean, does he know this?
Was Saleh not on the sideline when his Jets beat the Broncos at Mile High Stadium
this
year?
Didn't they play Nathaniel Hackett?
Didn't he look across the view? They're not going to score on us, boys. We're good.
This is nothing less than a blatant attempt to lure Aaron Rodgers from Green Bay in a trade.
No.
And by the way, doesn't that sound familiar around here?
I got a little deja vu over here.
Some things make no sense. I guess if you throw in his relationship and then the fact that, well, the fact we believe that the Jets are in the mix to trade, try to trade for Aaron Rodgers, Nathaniel Hackett makes some sense in that regard. And I'm not going to throw Nathaniel Hackett any more under the bus. I don't mean to be totally flippant about Nathaniel Hackett. I like the guy. I think he's a good football guy. He may be in and of himself a good offensive coordinator. More power to him. He can't be any worse than he was calling plays and running the offense here in Denver. So if you're going to go from that standpoint, the only place he has to go is up. And he doesn't mind kind of mentioning or at least alluding to some form of dysfunction in Denver. Man, I love the truth serum that where you are in the moment inevitably brings out.
And then also recently, I don't know if you saw this, Joe Namath came out and said that he would give Aaron Rodgers permission to unretire 12.
Thank you.
To come to New York. Can you imagine? Can you imagine Aaron Rodgers in a Jets uniform? If Aaron Rodgers is in a Jets uniform, you know what he's going to do after he's in a Jets uniform? He's going to go to Minnesota and he's going to play for the Vikings, you know? And then he might do a little mishap in Mississippi. Who knows if he really wants to follow in a former Green Bay Packers steps there. Yeah. I mean, this just reeks of desperation by the Jets organization to get Aaron Rodgers, even though I don't know if they watched Aaron Rodgers play football this season. He's not the Aaron Rodgers that he's been historically in his career. But I guess if my quarterback was Zach Wilson, I'd want to get rid of him and get anybody as I would as well, because that franchise, especially with quarterbacks, has been almost as bad as the Broncos.
Can you imagine Aaron Rodgers in the number one media market in the world where they have no problem opening up a can of figurative whoop-ass and beating you over the head with it every single day? Can you imagine him going from Green Bay? No knock on Green Bay. Green Bay is an NFL town, mm-hmm. and they are covered like just about any other, probably more so than a lot of NFL franchises around the league. With more energy and focus, they obviously own the narrative, but they are covered. But nothing like what he would deal with in New York.
I have a buddy that works in Green Bay, and I'm not going to name him, but I know he was a huge Aaron Rodgers fan, and he was a young guy. Most of the guys in that market, especially television-wise, that's kind of a mid-market in the television business, so it tends to lean a little bit younger unless you got guys that have been in that market forever. But I know my buddy was starstruck, and I know for a fact that he was afraid to ask Aaron Rodgers pressing questions. If he goes to New York, trust me, those guys are not afraid to ask you questions, and if you give your little snarky responses, they're not afraid to fire right back at you.
Do you remember when Randy Johnson became a Yankee and he's walking down the street and they're and he's pushing people away, and one of the guys that is holding the camera, "Welcome to New York." Well, let me tell you something. That's exactly right. Aaron Rodgers in New York would be, for me, really entertaining. Really entertaining. I just would love to see how that whole mix comes about. Maybe we'll get our chance. All right, coming up next, the final word, in case you've missed it, courtesy of Mountain High Appliance. That is, we continue here on the Morning Drive. Goodman and Hurdle, Mick Miller in from Fox 31, Colorado's Channel 2. Alex takes us to break.
Morning Drive with Goodman and Hurdle, presented by Silter Har Mazda. A no-pressure buying experience in Broomfield at Silter Har Mazda. Find them at sthmazda.com. Live from the Sasquatch Casino and Wildcard Casino Sports Desk, here's Eric and Bruce.
Mick Miller in from Fox 31 and Colorado's Channel 2, or is it 2 Prime News?
I can never
remember. We call it a lot of different things, don't we?
We do. We got Colorado Sports Night. We got Fox 31, Channel 2. We got a lot of stuff going on.
How do you feel like Colorado Sports Night is rolling?
I think it's awesome. Good. When I was interviewing for the job, that was something that I looked at and I was like, this is going to be really, really cool, a really cool opportunity. And honestly, it's like really the only sports talk show that airs Monday through Friday. So it's a great opportunity. And hey, when the Nuggets and the Avs are playing in the playoffs and you can't watch the games, or you know, you're up late watching the Nuggets and the Avs in the playoffs, you can tune into Colorado Sports Night because we'll be live on location having a great time.
Yeah, that's on Colorado's Channel 2 at 11 o'clock Monday through Friday. And a shout out to Taylor Kilgore, Arn Anderson, you guys have been and Dave Althaus, obviously, our executive sports producer, who is an absolute wizard at such things as editing and producing and things of that nature, have done a really good job. It's a good franchise, and we're proud of it. With that, let's get to the Mountain High Appliance, just in case you missed it.
The Final Word. Are you ready? Presented by Sasquatch Casino in Blackhawk. Just in case you missed it. Presented by Mountain High Appliance, Colorado's favorite appliance store for 25 years in Louisville, Colorado Springs, and now open in their new store in Littleton. Go to mountainhighappliance.com.
Okay, guys, just in case you missed it, the Avs' 6-game win streak came to an end last night as the Anaheim Ducks upset the Avs 5-3 in Ball Arena in Cale Makar's return to the ice. The Avs blew a 2-goal lead as they led 3-1 in the second period before the Ducks scored 4 unanswered goals. Your reaction to the Avs' loss to a bad Anaheim team last night?
It was disappointing, but you know something? I've been at the Avs about 3 times this week, and yesterday I thought Jared Bednar said something very interesting. He said that they had not checked in a fashion in the game against the Washington Capitals that, quote, they didn't deserve to win the game. I thought that was a very candid remark from a head coach, but it was also somewhat telling. And they followed suit yesterday. They had a first, 10 minutes or so of the third period that was absolutely uninspired and putrid. You play that game 10 times, you should win it 9.5 times. Anaheim, only 33 points coming in, one of the 3 worst teams in the NHL, and you made them look awfully good in that third period.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking, Mikko Rantanen has been awesome this year, and he was awesome once again last night. It seemed like they got that 3-1 lead, and they were like, cool.
Put it in cruise control.
They're not going to fight back, but guess what? Anaheim, a franchise that, like you said, has been awful this year. Look, they had nothing to lose. They came back, and then all of a sudden, they were like, oh, well, okay, it's 3-3. You know, we'll probably be able to get this thing back. Then, you know, before you know it, Anaheim scores, and then they get an empty netter. It was just one of those games where you're just like, okay, for 40 minutes, you looked great. Why the final 20 minutes did you fall asleep at the wheel?
I don't know. These guys have not shown yet, and Cale Makar told us this week as well, has not been able to ratchet down the consistency. They looked like they were in a pretty good place during that 6-game winning streak, but unraveled last night. Chance to bounce back tomorrow against St. Louis.
All right, just in case you missed it, a topic of discussion in the NBA lately has been load management, with former players such as Charles Barkley saying, it's embarrassing for the NBA, and I cannot wait for these owners to put their foot in the next CBA. Also, Richard Jefferson had some interesting comments on the whole matter on ESPN yesterday. Are you okay with NBA stars all over the league taking nights off for rest, or would you like to see them being to play every single night?
I'm so sick of this. And to go to your point, Alex, on Richard Jefferson's story quickly, he was a young kid. David Robinson was his favorite player. His parents could not afford to go to the game, so his father and his mother bought him a ticket, and Richard Jefferson went to the game by himself. His father went to a bar, picked him up after the game, and Richard Jefferson said if David Robinson had not played, he would have been devastated. Kobe Bryant, 3 years ago yesterday, was his passing. I was watching highlights all day yesterday, and I came across a clip where his beautiful wife Vanessa and his Hall of Fame induction speech talked about how Kobe, he played through injury because he was afraid that a young child would be going to the game for the first time to see him play, and he would be terrified if he missed the game because of injury because of that.
Got nothing to add. Absolutely.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad for those fans in Cleveland. Was it a week or two ago when the Warriors were going to Cleveland and they sat Clay and Steph and Draymond and all these guys? Imagine if you're a kid and you spent $100 on a ticket.
Well, and let's call it what it is. I mean, the Nuggets did it in Milwaukee.
They did.
Right? I mean,
right.
They did. I mean, you got Nikola Jokic coming in against Giannis, and if you're in Milwaukee, that's a game that's got to be circled on your calendar, right?
100%.
I mean, that's the only time that they're going to be in there unless there's an NBA final.
Right.
Between Milwaukee and the Nuggets. You know, and look, I get it. I understand it. I really do. They play 82 games and it's a grind, but I don't know. There's more to the equation.
All right, one more before we get to the top of the hour. Vic Fangio interviewed for the Miami Dolphins defensive coordinator job, and he's reportedly wanted by multiple teams. Fangio and Mike McDaniel have a really good relationship, and McDaniel has seen Fangio's scheme as an option to run Miami's defense for a year now. Think Fangio will be paired up with McDaniel on the Dolphins coaching staff?
Well, it looks like they've cleaned house because they've let go of their offensive coordinator as well. So they are now looking for their top offensive and defensive guys in Miami. Looks like McDaniel is going to survive. Why not Vic Fangio? Look, Alex, would you hire Vic Fangio?
Oh, as a DC, absolutely.
Zach, would you hire Vic Fangio? There's a thumbs up. Mick?
I would do it, not as a head coach, but as a DC, there are a lot of guys that are good coordinators.
He's not a head coach.
Yeah.
He proved that. And you know something? And Vic, probably in his truthful moment, might even admit it. He was not interested in the offensive process when he was here in Denver. There were plenty of times at press conferences when I heard the, I don't know, I didn't see the offense today. It's like, dude, you're the head coach, not the defensive coordinator.
And listen, Mike McDaniel's an offensive wizard, so it's a great scenario where you can just focus on the defense and McDaniel be like, hey, Vic, I got this.
All right, the final word brought to you by Mountain High Appliance. Just in case you missed it, thank you, Alex. We appreciate it. Coming up when we continue as we roll into hour number two, the first domino in the coaching ranks fell yesterday. It went to Carolina, and they went with a legacy pick. We'll talk about that and more as we continue here on The Morning Drive.
Got a good job at the dollar store. 1 foot in the hole, 1 foot getting deeper with a broken mirror and a blown out speaker. And I ain't got much else to lose.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.